have seen the dark shadows moving in the woods, and I have no doubt that whatever I have resurrected through this book is sure to come calling for me.
David, you look absolutely terrific, honestly. You've got like glue on.
This is where the worst begins. This is where we must stop. For beyond is the work of madness. The nightmare of insane murder. And lingering death. Get inside and lock your doors. Close your windows. Someone is watching you. Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death.
This is Albert from the Tuesday Show. You're listening to the goddamn Dave Hill Show, now on a flipping Monday.
No. No. You're an angel witch. Thank you. I always forget the majesty of that song every week.
So good.
And then every week, it's like I'm hearing it for the first time. And I know I often comment on the magic of this song.
Relentless.
Which is called Angel Witch by the band Angel Witch from a little album I like to call, that's right, Angel Witch. I'm going to take a sip of water.
Clear pint glass.
Oh, yeah, my Dio pint glass, not to brag. Everything tastes better when you're drinking it from a Dio pint glass, I have to say.
Don't you have an AC/DC pint glass, too?
Excel.
I'm glad you asked. I used to have four AC/DC pint glasses, which were part of a set of pint glasses I like to think of as my AC/DC pint glass set, given to me by my brother Bob, my only brother. And weirdly, or maybe not so weirdly, all the Brian Johnson album pint glasses broke. And the Highway to Hell Bon Scott album, that pint glass remains. And that was, it's my favorite AC/DC album. Well, I don't know. I like all the Bon Scott records. Or I prefer them. So, anyway, that's my long answer. Yes. I do have one. I don't know what happened. Maybe I may have two. I could probably go to the kitchen and find out. But this seems, I don't know. Seems unnecessary. I can confirm. I do have the...
You have a lot of really cool graphic... Cups.
Mugs. If you have a beverage in my home, you're in for a real treat. Yeah, because I figure if you're going to drink a beverage, why not keep it fun?
You got it.
Got to keep it fun. I have too many. I've started to, like... I actually had to purge some mugs and stuff because I was like, sorry, not fun enough. It's time for you to go.
What'd you end up doing with them?
Just setting them out on the street.
New York style.
For someone to have their way with.
Probably a good find then for somebody.
Yeah, why not, right? If you set stuff out on a Saturday, people will usually come and grab it eventually.
In minutes, though, usually.
Weirdly, what... sometimes it takes a little while. I'm trying to think of... There was one item that was weirdly stubborn in leaving. Anyway, my point is... Hello and welcome to the Dave Hill Good Time Hour with me, Dave Hill, from before. Hi, how are you? And hi, how are you, boy criminal Chris Gersbeck?
I'm great, Dave. Thanks for asking.
Sporting a fabulous... Do I call it a top when it's a man's shirt? I don't know how this all works. Top. You're wearing a shirt of some sort.
Sure. It's a polo.
People listening in the podcast form can't, but it's It's great. I think Chris has been doing some great online shopping.
Oh, thank you.
It's very strong.
I advise. You're my advisor. Not all the time, but...
You know. No, but I appreciate sometimes you run things by me, purchases.
Wardrobe, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Advisor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard, you know... This is... I'm actually supposed to get it back tomorrow, and I'm thinking of posting... Because sometimes in the past, I've posted... Back when I was on Twitter, I would do this, and I think I've probably done it on Instagram. I will, if I'm unsure of a purchase... I'll take a picture and leave it to the public to decide. And usually the votes are right in the end. There's only been one item where I was like, should I get this? And, well, no, one I did get and one I did not get. And I think in the end... the public was right in both counts. But I got this jacket, which maybe you guys have seen me wear, but I got this jacket on sale from Barney's Co-op years ago, not to brag. And then I got this patch that I didn't know what to do with it, so I put it on the coat. And then I had some other patches, and then I was like, where do you put patches? I don't know what to do with patches, but we live in a patch. This is the... I feel like patches are... There's a patch boom going on. Do you guys agree or disagree?
I'd agree.
Yeah. I mean, in high school, it was just you put them all on your backpack, but...
Yeah, well, I don't have a backpack.
Get a jean jacket.
Well, I don't want to... Jean jacket feels too on the nose. Plus, like...
Not if it's a sweet one.
Yeah, if it's a sweet one, you're right.
You know?
But I just decided to keep adding them to this jacket, and then I had all these patches, and I was like, this jacket's kind of... has, like, five patches on it. Which feels like maybe four too many. And then I was like, I have a dozen other patches. So I brought them to the laundromat. Because I was just like, I don't have time to sew these on. So
it was like a Zeppelin patch or something?
No, there's kind of a full range of topics being covered with these patches. There's the Ing Dave patch from... FMU days, the amazing patch designed by Danny Hellman.
Yep.
And I mean, there's several patches, but I was like, I don't have room for every patch. But the one year we had done three awesome patches by Danny Hellman. So I was like, let me start with this one. I'll ease into it. And then, the long and short of it is I have this patch jacket, which does not allow for, like, walking around without seeming like, hey, I'm the patch jacket guy. So, I'm gonna maybe post it and be like, yes or no. Should I be wearing this? I was thinking maybe coming up with rules for the jacket. Like, maybe I can only wear the jacket when I'm officially partying.
Yeah, you like, have to give it a status. I mean, you did it already with the patches, so now what are you going to do with it? You got to live up to it.
I was thinking like it could be like a drinking in a field jacket. Like if you're not drinking and also in a field, you can't wear the jacket. Because it's definitely like, I know I've seen guys with a lot of stuff, like words and patches and stuff on their jackets. And I'm like, hey, calm down.
Drinking in a field, you could be like at a county fair or at like a football game tailgating, like out in the parking lot. And like,
which is like, that's happened twice in my life. I don't maybe happen one more time before I die. I'll wind up tailgating.
So you're going to find another use for the jacket then.
But I'm open to it. I think it's just people don't invite me, given my either perceived or outward disdain for football. Which would be right if anyone guessing or actually knowing that in both cases I have no interest.
Right.
But I do like drinking in parking lots, sure.
So you don't have to go to the game, but like if a couple
people
are going, you could hang out.
I'd be into that.
Early in the year, it's a lovely way to spend an afternoon.
Yeah, good times. So anyway, I'm going to get this jacket back. They say it's going to be ready tomorrow. I've already remembered some patches I forgot to have sewn onto it. So I might just have to turn it right around and then go back. But then I thought, maybe it's a patch to wait until I'm like 75 and wear it then, when I'm just in full crazy old man mode.
Wearing a scarf all day?
Scarf, patch jacket, rings on every finger, cane I don't even need.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I get a hat, some fun hat by then. I'm not sure.
It's all there for you, waiting.
Beard, potentially. Doubtful, but potentially.
You've essentially described my old man, so.
Yeah, I figure
this exists.
I want to be some rascal around town. You know, people are like, talk to crazy old Dave. He's all hands. You know? I don't know. This is what I aspire to.
You know, a lot of
Mike Johnson says tatted to the T. Would you
tatted?
Yeah, like would you get a tattoo in your advanced years? Just say
no. I think if you get a tattoo, if you haven't had any tattoos before the age of 30, the ship has sailed. Pretty much, unless like I don't know. I know people have like I'm gonna sign off on all. I'm against all of it.
Okay.
If you're over 30 and you have no tattoos.
It's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah, that's and like, you know, like my mom probably will get a tattoo.
Well,
and it's, you know, past, I think it's past your prime to do that.
I don't know. I know two people on Earth who I think their tattoos suit them. And the rest, I'm like, if you had a do-over, you know, it would be really great. Get rid of all those. Maybe a few. No, there's a few. The only tattoos I think look good are the tattoos where the people obviously have a complete disregard. Like, they just treat their body like an alley. Or, you know? Like... Yeah. My friends that look good with tattoos are people that are just like, fuck it, I'm going to get whatever tattooed on me, wherever.
Mike Johnson wrote pineapple in the comments.
Well, he would be an exception. I think his tattoo... Okay, let me add three friends. Because he's a different category, because his is like... I mean, his is like a whole body thing. He's committed on a level.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, his body is like a work of art.
Totally.
So that's a whole other category. But the other people I know that look good are more like rockers who just have random tattoos and look like most of them, you're like, that seems like you didn't put a lot of thought into that. It's when people have like, I got like a koi fish wrapped and it turns into a tiger and then there's a lizard and then it's like all wrapped around their arm. Like John Mayer has something to that effect. I don't know what he has.
I feel like there was a time at least where like a full body sleeve or It was kind of earned, but now, you know, like Motley Crue, I remember it was a big deal when, you know, they're 8 years into their career before they had like a full sleeve tat. And then you got like 18-year-olds coming up who have like a full job, and it's almost not earned. They haven't lived enough to get that much marking yet.
No, you gotta like, I mean, I don't know, whatever.
Did you guys see what Fred Durst looks like now?
Yeah.
I did see that actually.
I found myself...
It was brought to my attention by Todd Berry, I believe.
I found myself whistling Faith, you know, because they did a version.
Yeah.
I guess that'd be like the closest to anything I enjoyed at a Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
But so he mission accomplished. Dick.
That's not my thing.
No.
It's not my thing. I don't know if he has any tats. He probably does.
I believe so, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what reminded me, because he wore like a coat. He dressed like a dad basically, and he wore a coat the entire time. But I noticed like he had all the finger.
Oh yeah, I guess I did. I respect, you know. I will say it was the most interest I've taken in Fred Durst
exactly.
in history.
A good weekend.
So there. Last week we're talking about this. I apologize. We took last week off. I know many people around the globe were completely devastated. But I was in sunny Atlanta, Georgia. Do we talk? We didn't talk about. We were talking about this before we went on the air.
Yeah,
correct.
But I can tease it. I was collaborating with none other than Puddle's Pity Party.
Yeah.
So
nice get.
There's some heat coming down the pike. We've done stuff together before on his live stream. This is another level. Another level.
Yeah, I don't think we ever asked how Dez was doing.
I know, we didn't even get to this. Oh, it's so, I feel so, it's just so we went off on this whole tangent.
Everyone's commenting about how good his hair looks. So I was like,
that's what I wanted to address next. Again, these are things people listening in the futuristic podcast format miss out on. But Dez's hair, after I don't even know how long of just this wild hair, now he looks like he could manage, he could do anything.
I'm having a good day, I guess.
I was going to say, you could manage an AutoZone, or you could, hang on, let me get the manager. Oh, shit, this guy's got a car rental place.
I just ran my hand through it before. Oh, yeah, I got my glasses up here. That might be helping.
You could also be like, like a magician. It's a good like magician's look,
and it's all mine. It's legit. You know, I'm getting on in years a little bit to the point where I could be running into trouble. But you know, knock on wood.
I feel like you're out of like, you're in extra innings. You know, like, I think not extra. I just think if you make it past 40 with luxurious hair,
yeah,
then it's all bonus after that. And you'll be on your deathbed. I'll be staring down at your cold, dead body one day. Years from now, of course.
Right.
And I'll be there bawling my eyes out. But I'll just be like, look at that hair. How about that?
You know, when you said that, I was picturing you like at a crime scene.
No, I was thinking at the wake, the wake. I don't know why I pictured. Yeah, I'm just there, just making chit chat. Some suburb in New Jersey, some funeral home in New Jersey, I'm guessing.
We're kind of in like an exurb here.
What's that?
I think this is like kind of an exurban area. Beyond the suburbs.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, no, I know, but I'm just saying you're gonna have to head into town for good luck finding a nursing home out where you live.
Well, we just go into the woods and take care of it then.
Maybe we set your dead body on fire. That's now that I'm here.
I'm not averse to that.
Without revealing too much, I was at a farm sometime in the last year and a half, let's say, right before the pandemic. And there were goats on this farm, and they said that when they died, they took them out and just burned them.
Really?
And I thought, that's efficient, but also kind of weird.
Were they pet goats? Were they working goats? Were they producing goats? Were they sick?
Now you've thrown a lot of cat. I think of all goats as just fun goats that are just around in general, but you've given me categories I didn't know existed.
Well, they're always all fun, I suppose. That was an overgeneralization on my part.
What work do goats do? Oh, they can eat grass. They can mow lawns.
They produce milk.
They do
milk.
This is true. You've named two things without even trying.
Home security.
What were the other ones you called? There's a third job they have. Or category.
Food?
No. Well, you can eat goat. I've eaten goat before. Not in many years, but I have had. Have you ever had goat?
No.
Probably, maybe.
I've had goat. It's, I wouldn't seek it out.
It's like a kangaroo. I went to an Australian restaurant, saw kangaroo on the menu, and I didn't know people actually ate kangaroo.
Was it Outback?
Oh, they do.
It was an Outback. But
in the United States, you saw kangaroo on the menu?
Yeah, yeah. In Astoria. Wow.
Real? Yeah, I was talking about this in Atlanta with some friends that they had been in Australia and had kangaroo.
I think it's like population control.
I stopped eating all that, those kind of animals, really. So,
yeah,
it won't happen. But yeah, I was in Switzerland, minding my own business, just having lunch with a friend in Geneva, and there was horse on the menu. I'd never seen that before.
Wow!
But this is why I like traveling. You're having lunch in Geneva. It's horse on the menu.
There you go. What do they call it? Is it just like horse?
I think it just said horse.
Does horse meat have a specific...
Got horse burger? Horse steak?
It was, as I recall, presented in a way that made it even less appealing than you would have thought it was already.
Right.
Like it was like... What's that called? It was like thin strips of horse meat.
Jerky?
No, like... What's that called when they do that with beef? Like a plate of thin slices of beef that are like...
Like salted cured meat?
I don't know, but it was just like...
Horse tartare, someone's saying in the chat.
Yeah, it was kind of a horse... It was tartare adjacent. Like a carpaccio or something?
That's what Dave Bomundo just said. Horse carpaccio, of course.
Yes, what Dave Bomundo would... Exactly. That's exactly what Dave Bomundo would say. That's exactly what I was trying to think of. I think it was like a carpaccio scenario.
Fancy.
Which wouldn't interest me. I've had beef carpaccio, not in some time, but horse.
When I saw kangaroo, I thought the restaurant was just being cute. Like, I thought that was like, oh, that's a hamburger. I get it. They call it kangaroo.
No koala?
No, the name of the restaurant was Thirsty Koala, but they didn't have koala on
it. Where is it?
In Astoria.
In Astoria. There's like a Welsh restaurant in Queens. Is it in Astoria?
I don't know.
Let's check on it. Welsh restaurant.
I haven't lived there in a few years, so it's like, it's really changed a lot just in the past few years.
Welsh restaurant, Queens. Welsh restaurants near. But I wanted to go, given Snowdonia, it's called. But I... Because I like whales. Yeah, it's in Astoria. It says it's in the heart of Astoria.
What's the address? How about that? I'll be the judge of that.
I'm getting all these things. 32. Now we've started a commercial for Snowdonia, the Welsh gastropub of Astoria. 3201 35th Avenue, Queens.
All right. Sure.
That's not Astoria enough for you?
It is. It's more like the Long Island City area. But
oh, fuck off.
It's getting into that. It's still Astoria, but it's not. I don't know. If it was on Ditmars, I'd say, yeah.
I don't know why you have to fight this so much.
Sorry.
We're really covering a lot of ground on this show. We haven't even... Soon, we have an amazing guest. I've been meaning to have him on forever. But he'll be here soon. Shane Moss.
You want to take a call real quick?
Let's take a call. I never addressed this, I don't think, ever. But the show in which that I do this show... The room in which I do the show from in my apartment is the one room without air conditioning.
Tactical air.
So I'm always like fading in and out of consciousness. So if I ever... if you wonder why the show just rambles and drifts throughout, it's part of it. It's largely my personality is to blame, but...
There's also a gas leak in that room.
It's heat stroke. Is this... Who's calling? Is this Elvira from Minneapolis by any chance?
This is Elvira. How are you fine folks doing today?
Oh, really great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have a suggestion, my answer for my patch situation. My answer was Velcro. Because I had a lot of like security shirts and stuff, and then what I do is put the prickly side of the Velcro on the back of the patch, slap it on, and it'll look like, you know, I belong to K KMFDM security or whatever. And it allows me to be variety and not go overboard with patches, but have the right patch for the right event.
I think it's glad that you've found a partner in life, because that sort of talk will keep you single for a very long time. No, well, that's a good solution.
I match it with the belt buckle.
Oh, you're doubling down on it now. I don't like any of this advice. This is not to be encouraged.
I returned to the Fitzgerald Theater this week.
In St. Paul, Minnesota?
Doing shows in beautiful St. Paul, where we used to do Prairie Home Companion. But now it's owned by First Avenue Nightclub.
Oh, really? What's going on there?
It's some dance show with some people from Dancing in the Stars, but I just wanted to drop this thought in your mind now as your unauthorized agent. But when doing shows, you could do a little traveling 3 to 5 night Dave Hill Fests, where one night you do this fantastic good time hour, one night you do one of your bands, comedy the next night, and finish it off with some witch taint.
If I thought there would be more than 7 people at these events you describe, I would do it tomorrow.
Well, just put it in your mind. So, if there's anything I can help make that happen, let me know.
No, I would love it. Sadly, the demand on this planet is not there for that to happen.
Elvira, you just talked Dave right off of the show.
I've just walked off the show.
Had it.
I would love it. I would love to do that.
Hey, Dez. Oh, wait, he's back.
Yeah.
We got to get ready for our guest here.
Cross it over.
Yeah. I'm really excited for it. We got a true psychonaut on the way. By the way, the song by 1000 Homo DJs, Psychonaut, should be taught in schools.
All right.
And on that,
that'll be one of the many topics we consider here tonight.
Good night, Elvira.
Thank you, Elvira.
I'm Annabelle Gurwitch.
And I'm Laura House.
And we're the hosts of Tiny Victories.
My tiny victory is that I sewed that button back on the day after it broke.
We talk about that little thing that you did that's a big deal to you, but nobody else cares.
Did you get that Guggenheim Genius Award?
We don't want to hear from you. We want little bitty tiny victories.
My tiny victory is a tattoo that I added onto this past weekend.
Let's talk about it.
My victory is that I'm 1 year cancer free. But my tiny victory is that I took all of the cushions off the couch, pounded them out, put them back, and it looks so great.
So if you're like us and you want to celebrate the tiny achievements of ordinary people, listen to Tiny Victories.
It's on every Monday on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Jordan Morris, creator of the Max Fun scripted sci-fi comedy podcast, Bubble. We just released a special episode of Bubble to celebrate the launch of our new graphic novel. At SF Sketchfest in 2019, we recorded a live show with Allison Becker, Eliza Skinner, Mike Mitchell, Cristela Alonso, and special guests Jean Grey, Jonathan Colton, Jesse Thorne, Nick Weiger, and a bunch of other cool folks.
We suspect he'll show signs of mutation when in a state of excitement. Now, Annie matched with him on Tinder, so she's going to act as the honeypot.
I do enjoy being called a honeypot.
Hey, you know what's better than honey? Gravy.
Oh, yeah. Can I be the gravy sack?
Out now on MaximumFun.org and wherever you get podcasts. And pick up the graphic novel at your local bookstore today.
Is that him on the on deck circle there, Chris Gersbeck?
Yeah, Shane.
Oh, right.
Good to go.
This would be a first where we actually get the guest on when we say we're going to do it instead of like 78 minutes later. I'm super excited for our guest tonight, as I've said already a few minutes ago, I've been meaning to have him on forever. He's one of my favorite comedians, and I'm not just saying that because I know that seems like something a comedian would say about it. That's like what someone says when they're bringing someone up on a show. They're like, hey, this guy's one of my favorite comedians.
Plays all over the city.
Yeah, plays all over this. You've seen him on... I'm turning my introduction into my impression of a host of a comedy show, bring some people on. Anyway, but no, seriously, I love him. And he, not only is he hilarious, but he inspired me in many ways into my own journey of psychedelics. He has a great documentary, which I encourage all of you to watch, called Psychonautics. And he is host of the Mind Under, or co-host. I struggle with basic words. I can't even say this sentence that I'm attempting to say now. But he's a host of the co-host of the Mind Under Matter podcast. And Here We Are podcast, which he's the host of. Ladies and gentlemen, he walks among us. Shane Moss. That was slick. There he is.
Hello. Clubs and colleges all around the country.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen him in clubs.
Hey, guys.
Great evening. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fantastic. I was just enjoying the show. I have a good tattoo for you. I had a friend when he was 16, got a... he was a big Limp Bizkit fan and got Faith tattooed above his knee, which is smooth because most people don't know it was because of Limp Bizkit. Now he's just like, I just have Faith. And
oh, that's good.
But he got it because of Limp Bizkit. He got it. That's how much he loved the song. And yeah. And now he's turned his body into an alley. Actually, he got into nautical engineering and builds ships and stuff. So he has a lot of pirate-ish tattoos. So I guess it works. But I'm not a tattoo person either.
You don't have any tattoos?
I have none. No. No, I took a chance on a shirt today, though, because I was inspired by Chris.
Oh, nice.
That was a bold choice, and so I got my boldest outfit out of my closet. And so
wow.
I got like a weird psychedelic Ed Hardy sort of situation.
I love that. What is that shirt you're wearing there?
It's like
if you describe it to the listener.
Yeah, it's like a, I don't know, I guess it's like a dome, like a, what are they called? A biodome with a tree in it in space or something with like a radar. I'm just looking at it now. I know I've never second guessed a shirt purchase so much in my life, but I pulled the trigger on it.
It's strong. I like it. And am I correct? And is it a baseball sleeved shirt?
Yeah, it's my only baseball sleeve. It's the second one in my life, but my only baseball sleeve one. Also, can I share a patch story?
Please.
I used to have a joke about this, and I had to create the joke on the spot. It eventually like made it onto my Comedy Central Presents or whatever, but it was from, I bought this shirt, just a button-down shirt. It looked nice online, and I put it on, and I wear it to the comedy studio in Cambridge, and I'm backstage about to go on, and a buddy points at the patch that I didn't know was on my sleeve, and they're like, what the hell is this? And it's just a patch that says "Too Tough to Die" on it.
Did the shirt come that way?
Yeah, that's how it came. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And they didn't put that online. That was, there was no picture of that or information. It's just surprise. Too Tough to Die patch.
That's what did you do? Did you cover the patch or did you just?
I made a joke about it. On that, like, I addressed it because you know, when you're self-conscious and kind of get out, like you spill water on your pants, you're like, oh man, so everyone's going to know I peed. I better make a pee joke quick or something like that.
Yeah.
That was the sort of situation. And I think I made a joke about how, I'm not too tough to die. I'm too weak to live. Or oh, it was because I couldn't tear the patch off. And I was like, I'm too weak to live. Something like that. And so I made it work. So then, because then I had that joke, then I would have to wear that shirt when I wanted to do the joke, which must have been stronger than whatever I just repeated.
Not yet.
It was like 15 years ago.
Now I want to see this shirt.
I don't think I have it. Maybe it's in storage somewhere. I don't know. And I have to say, Dave, I don't want to, we haven't talked in a long time, and I don't want to like start our conversation off with like turbulence, but I like the guy's Velcro patch idea. I think that's a strong solution.
It is not a bad idea. I was just more being abusive to him, him being a regular caller.
Yeah.
No, I think, but it also partially that. But I am genuinely insecure about this patch situation I've gotten myself into. I don't even want to say I taped all these patches onto the jacket, like where I think they would look quote unquote cool.
Yeah.
And then I had to go pick up my laundry. So I was like, I'm going to bring this jacket in there and then say, you know, have at it. And then it's a couple. And the husband said, fun. Which is exactly what I'm afraid of. He just said fun.
Oh boy.
And then they kind of looked at it and totaled like what it would cost, and it was like so much money.
Did you see them taking photos of it? Did you see them taking photos of it or anything?
No, they were just kind of like, it was just turning into like, it just was quickly going to a category of just a stupid amount of money to be paying to put these patches on my jacket, of this jacket that, as discussed, I will never be comfortable really just wearing with any regularity unless I just want to draw attention to myself. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Well, one, the first, I did just watch the movie Tenet last night, and there's an opening scene where they put Velcro patches on to, like, depending on which SEAL team or whatever shows up. So maybe I'm inspired by that, but I do like the idea of having different patches in the arsenal. So if you're like feeling a different vibe, like, or a different mood or something, you could do it throughout if you're like bar hopping or seeing different people or whatever. Also, in 2019, I was at this Port Elliott Festival. It like was originally a book fair, and then it turned into like a family Burning Man-ish sort of situation as in England. And there was this booth there that had all these, hold on one second.
Like a teaser in the middle of the story.
Yeah, this is exciting. He's back.
Had all these like antique, I walk by and there's a table of, oh man, I'm new to having long hair.
It looks great, by the way.
Thank you. There's a table of antique top hats, and I was like, look at this fucking thing. And I put it on and I was like, well, I guess that's my top hat, because this is amazing. So it's like 120 years old.
It works. Like an
old English top hat.
Well, you've just become Leon Russell in his prime. That's, I mean, you should totally wear that top hat all the time.
The reason I brought it up was because then I went back and I was like, what else do they have there? And I found this like old ass huge Van Helsing jacket, like 130 years old leather, like just looked amazing. And I'm like, that's a bold. It took me 3 days. Is it still there? And then I bought it and it's really awesome. And so I was like, you know what? The line's like the lining inside is torn to shreds. So I'm gonna go and get new lining for it. This jacket's so awesome. And so I took a chance. So it cost $200 to have them. They did a great job. But I took a chance on, I was going for a dark purple situation where like you wouldn't know it was purple unless you looked close. And then it was magician purple. And so
the lining?
Yeah.
But it's like your little secret, right? No one knows about it.
It's like a whole Van Helsing situation. So it's like a cape that you're wearing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's
sounds pretty amazing.
I sympathize with your not wanting to spend a bunch of money on patches and make the wrong decision, because I've know from personal experience that that can go horribly wrong.
Yeah, and then it can but if it goes right, yeah, and you're flying with the eagles. It's amazing, amazing feeling. I love this. I bought a jacket in England, like a really old coat, like same thing, 100 years old, like on outdoors on Portobello Road in London. And it's like, I put it on, and the guy must have seen me coming a mile away. I put it on, he's like, oh, you look like you're in the Faces, which I was like, oh, of course, take my money. So I bought it. I was like, that's the exact thing you would need to say to me to get me to buy a coat. So I bought it, and it was amazing. It was so warm, like you could turn a fire hose on me in this. It doesn't look warm. Like whenever I wear it, people are like, aren't you freezing? I'm like, no. This coat's 100 years. It's like a Dutch livery jacket, which I guess is like a stable boy jacket. It's amazing.
Plus, you get to tell people it's a stable boy jacket.
Yeah,
that's a fun.
Yeah, exactly. This is the kind of fun I'm capable of.
It'd be funny if you went back to the store and you heard the same guy tell someone else that they look like they're in the Faces.
Yeah, I'm sure he does it all day long. I'm sure that's exactly what he does. Size someone up, just look like their haircut, see what band they obviously wish they had been in, and then mention that band. Done.
Yeah, I saw.
But I want to, I know a lot of people watched movies over the pandemic times, but one of my favorite things I watched was your documentary Psychonautics.
Oh, thanks. That's so nice of you to say.
And we've talked about this a bit on the show, because right before the pandemic, Psychonautics is
it's called A Comics Exploration of Psychedelics.
That's the full title. And I was really especially excited knowing you, and then I had just started exploring psychedelics like right before the pandemic.
Oh wow. Only the first one.
Well, I don't know if this counts really. Like it just all in microdosing. Which I know is like baby steps.
Yeah, I mean if it works for you, great. I'm not a microdoser. I've tried, and I haven't tried enough, and I don't think I ever did it like exactly perfectly. I kind of eyeballed it, and I did it a couple times when I was having some depression, and it seemed to exacerbate it a little bit. And so for me, so most of my journey early on with psychedelics was, well, first it was just being reckless and having fun, but then I realized that it helped with my depression, and so I would use mushrooms like a few times a year, usually pretty big doses, kind of early on. But microdosing Yeah, I mean, it's all the rage these days for sure. People swear
it is. It is. But I've heard, what would you call it, macrodosing?
Yeah.
That's the more.
Well, I would say that my reservations about microdosing is anything where you're regularly changing your neurochemistry. That's something that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. Whereas like macrodosing, that's more about, yes, it's a chemical change for that one time, but it's more about the experiential change that lingers afterwards and some of the hopefully insights. And that's kind of what I'm after. It tends to be a pretty good creative tool and everything. And if you see the movie, you'll see I'm not necessarily that comes with lots of caveats. I went that movie ends with me going to a psych ward, so it's you know, it's not without risks, but
yeah it's a full, there's a full range of it's intense, like
yeah I wish we could have like recorded, or they would have let us have security footage from the psych ward or something, but obviously that was never going to happen. And we didn't shoot anything while I was actually insane. I kind of dropped off the face of the earth for like 3 weeks, and my director and producer and stuff were trying to get a hold of me. And then when I finally called back, I was super paranoid at the time. And I was having like lots of Truman Show-ish things, and they're wanting to make editing decisions. And I'm like, I can't watch myself on a screen right now. I can't do that. And it was, yeah, it was, I had a full blown manic episode and went very paranoid, but I wish there was a little footage of that instead of just a description, but well.
And the movie, people can still, I watched it, I think on Tubi.
It's on Amazon Prime for free, and then it's on a bunch of other things. You can buy it on Vimeo and YouTube and stuff like that.
Everyone should seek it out. It's
the link
really
in the
great
chat there if anyone wants to.
Yeah, Lincoln in the chat.
Did you have success with your microdosing?
I did, you know, it's interesting. The first go round was right before the pandemic, and it was, I mean, I had sort of an after school special fear of drugs, like growing up, you know, like just like,
it worked for you.
Yeah, it. I was totally. And I don't know where it came from, and I probably talked about this already on the show at some point, but yeah, I had just like this thing. I don't know. It wasn't my parents that put it in me, because they never talked about it, and so I just had these lingering hangups, I think, and then I read an article about microdosing a few years ago, and I was like, oh, this sounds like maybe would really help me with my anxiety and depression, you know, I've been dealing with for, you know, since my early 20s.
Yeah.
And so, and it's one of those things, what's that phenomenon? Once you get something on your mind, it's everywhere.
Yeah, like there's confirmation bias, or
maybe that's it. Yeah,
yeah. We're just talking about this.
It's like it was all of a sudden.
Oh yeah.
As soon as I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this, people randomly would just be like, "Hey, I'm on mushrooms right now."
Yeah.
And I'd be like, "How did you think to tell me that?"
Yeah.
And then like, and so I very quickly found this woman, and just all these things, like even I can't remember the name of it, but there's a psychedelics podcast that reached out to me before I had ever spoken about it publicly in any way. They were like, hey, we want to have you on our show. And I was like, how did you know to ask me? And they're like, we just had a feeling about you. And I had to be like, well, I'm currently taking, you know, mushrooms, LSD, and peyote, but I'm not tripped on any of them. It's all been like sub-perceptual. And I was like, I feel like I'm just going to be really boring. Like, I don't really have any, I don't feel like I can't really rise to the occasion of your show. And then they kind of were like, yeah, I think somehow they thought, but it was weird anyway, but just because I had never said anything anyway.
Yeah.
So I started doing that. And I found it, like just this little shift in my, I always liken it to be like if you were stuck in like bumper cars, you know, in the corner and you're like, I can't get out. I can't get out. It was like the guy who manages the bumper cars just sort of yanks you out and like sets you right on the path so you can zip around again. I was like, oh. And then I felt like, I was like, for the first time in my adult life, I was like, I think I might be able to have a nice life. And even though I've had a very nice life, I'm conscious of that. But you know, with relation to anxiety and depression, I was like, I think I can rise above this enough to actually enjoy the nice life that I have.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the pandemic really dug in.
Yeah.
And like everything else that was was going on and is still going on.
I mean, that was, to me, I thought early on in the pandemic, I didn't trip at all, because to me, like the first 3 months were, I felt like I was on mushrooms the entire time. It was just such a perception shift. And it was the closest to when people, I don't agree with this at all, I never have, but a lot of psychedelic evangelists are like, you just need to dose everyone with LSD, put it in the drinking water. It's kind of the worst idea ever, but but that's pandemics, I feel like, are the closest to that. There's like certainly good things that come out of it, and like we learn things about ourselves and reveal blind spots and all that, but there's also lots of darkness and doom and gloom, and a big mushroom trip can be like that. In fact, I had my second full-on manic episode, fourth or second, depending on is my second time to a psych ward, in early June of 2020. And that was just, I was hypo since the pandemic, when the pandemic began, I just immediately, I was like in denial for a couple weeks. And then when I talked to, because I wasn't talking with scientists at the time. I talk with like at least one or two scientists a week for my podcast. But I was touring and I had episodes banked or whatever. And so I was like, what? Some biologist was explaining. So I'm like, you're crazy. And then when the reality of it set in, I just went full on. Like I was hypomanic, which is really a dream for
What does that mean?
Hypomanic is just hyper creative, tons of energy. You don't need much rest. You're feeling usually like $1 million, very motivated. And it's if anyone could sustain hypomania and just keep it at that level, it would be amazing. The problem is that it's usually shorter lived than, I'm bipolar, so usually I'm hypomanic for like two weeks at a time, but then I'm depressed for like 2 months at a time, so it's not like the greatest trade-off in the world.
Yeah.
And then full-blown mania, that's when you start making way too many connections. It's different for everybody, but this is like some people get really reckless. I'm kind of a reckless spender, but not like some people like invest all their money into some new idea that they had. And there's a lot of behavior like that. Mine comes along with lots of paranoia, lots of just nothing seems real. It's basically like one day I'll just wake up and I can't tell if I'm still dreaming or not. And then it just stays like that. And I just have whatever tells whatever part of the brain tells you when you're dreaming and not dreaming is just down and offline for, wow. And then I can usually last for about a week. Like I can mask it from people and mm-hmm. then I start getting strange. Everything means something, kind of like what you said when you were going to do psychedelics and people started coming up to you, like anything like that, that's just could, you know, be explained by some coincidence and some priming, some confirmation bias, whatever else. Just like when you hear a new word for the first time and then you hear it like three times a week for the next month or whatever. But yeah. Things like that are just like, no way is this a coincidence. And it just feels like there's a lot of egocentrism that comes around with it. It feels like everyone's passing you secret messages. It's like, it's everything has a different layer of meaning. You know how when you say, like, kids say the darndest things, because kids will say something that has a meaning to them and then it has a different meaning to adults. It feels like everything in every TV show you watch, any billboard that you see has this, like, okay, that's the meaning for everybody else, but I know this, like, road uh-huh. closed. Oh my God, is my life coming to an end? like just really kind of off the wall, reading way too deep into everything.
So it becomes
sort of problematic.
Like almost like your subconscious and your dreams becomes, that's like your waking hours where you're like, everything has symbolism.
Yeah.
Or meaning.
Yeah.
That's intense.
It's super intense. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's intense for other people too. Because you always have, the thing is a lot of your brain is still, or at least in my cases, I like some people get violent and stuff. I don't have that. A lot of people are very forgetful when they're in a manic episode. I tend to remember everything. And then also, there's a huge part of my brain that knows the thoughts that I'm having aren't real and aren't in line with reality. But on the off chance that this idea is right, then the consequences of this, if everything that I'm thinking is projecting and creating, like, so if I'm under stress, the world becomes stressed because I'm like manifesting this thing. And then you see like the first big manic episode that I had, it was right when Trump was provoking nuclear war with North Korea and like the little Rocket Man stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there was moments when I was thinking, is this a dream? And am I thinking, even if this is a dream, and like, am I doing this with my, is this because of my instability? The world is unstable. And then,
oh wow.
And then like every time an airplane is like coming overhead, I'm like, oh my God, is that like, that's the kind of like insane. And again, 99.9% of me knows that's not true, but on the like off chance that that the world will explode if I don't calm down or figure out some puzzle or some shit, it's intense. It's very, very, very intense. And so that happened just because I had over 20 years of nothing but positive outcomes from psychedelics. And then we were recording the documentary, had a low budget, limited time frame. And so I was just doing way more often than I would have mm-hmm. normally. And I was kind of just arrogant and like, well, it's always been great for me. I wonder if it could be even better if I have more, like, oh, if mushrooms can get you out of depression, can they make you feel good? Oh shit, they can. Can they make you feel great? Oh my gosh, I feel great. What's after great? And you don't you don't want to find out what's after great. After wow. great, things go real bad.
And then this episode in June of 2020, like, is that something that you recognized, or does someone, was someone like, hey, Shane?
Yeah, no, I was like, it was, I could feel it coming for like 2 weeks ahead of time. You know, I'd lost all my income and I had a team built around me and I was trying to keep them afloat. I'm like maxing out my credit cards to keep my team to like, well, we'll just do something else. I'll just retool. And, you know, my assistant's job depends on me and the other people that I work with, an editor and stuff. And so, you know, like so many people, I was under a lot of stress that way. And then just the pandemic generally. And then, oh, oddly enough, I brought up the movie Tenet. Well, years ago when I had my first manic episode, I had this idea that everyone's subconscious, it's an idea that I later wrote off, but it was like our subconscious picks up on things that we don't realize. And sometimes we're articulating things that we don't know ourselves, like what we're stumbling on. And I thought I was like tapping into something. And I was convinced that if you watched Christopher Nolan's movies backwards, it was like some, not like on rewind, like in the order. It was explaining all of these same ideas about how the subconscious can influence the world or this sort of thing. And I was like, and then I kept on having these ideas. I thought time travelers were messing with me, and I kept on having these ideas that something was sending something back from the future that can be reversed in time. And I kept on seeing, you know, when you see someone like the jumping in a pool in reverse and it looks like they're like jumping out of the pool or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, things just started looking like that to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Christopher Nolan's next movie is going to be about this. And I said that in 2017. And then I totally forgot about it. Well, in May of last year, I'm like, oh, Christopher Nolan has a new movie. And then I look at the preview and it's all just about sending things back in time and all that.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, then it just started. I was already hypomanic. I was already really anxious. And then that just started. Then I started seeing like too many synchronicities again. And it's getting a little out of control. And then I turned 40 living in my parents' basement on May 25th. And that hit me a little harder than I realized it was going to. I mean, it was the pandemic and everything else. And it was just a odd situation. But then that's when the George Floyd stuff started happening. And then the protests and everything. And I'm in La Crosse, Wisconsin. So it's like 2.5 hours from Minneapolis. And I had friends coming from there and stuff. And just something started revving up where I, like, one morning I had one of the most intense dreams of my life. And it was like showing me that all of my life was a setup, and it was all to, like, I created it to make fun of myself. Like, every time I had been on stage, it was like, and I thought I was being funny. It was like a bunch of, it was, the joke was on me the whole time. Like, they were laughing that it wasn't, it was like this whole thing. And then I woke up from it, and I just couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if that was the dream or if this is the dream. And I had, I started having a really severe panic attack, which I thought was a heart attack, even though I'd had one panic attack before in my life, which also was like early on and triggered the first manic episode. So it seems to be connected with that too. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was having a heart attack for sure. And I was going to call 911. And then I was like, but how does it, what if everything's a trick? And I call 911 and that's what they want me to do. And then I couldn't, so like, I couldn't call 911. Maybe if I just sit outside, and that way, if I like die there, maybe a neighbor will see me or something like that. They'll be able to call an ambulance. It was just and from that day on, I just couldn't decipher reality. I couldn't tell whether I was dreaming or not. And so I just started acting like really peculiar, and I was trying to hide it from people. And then eventually it just like, I just totally lost control of reality. And I had no idea what was going on. Like, I wanted to like confront the police and stuff like that. It was starting to get,
oh wow,
like dangerous. So then ended up in my parents ended up calling an ambulance one night, and then they strapped me in and
wow.
Yeah. And so, oh, I wasn't wearing clothes at the time either. So that's, you know, that's another indicator. That's,
wow,
was a whole situation. Yeah.
Were you with anyone throughout all this? Or are you just in your...
No, just with my parents. My parents are here. And they don't understand any of it. And they don't know like mental health things or whatever. So they're like, what the fuck is going on? It's very... Manic episodes are usually at least as hard on other people as they are on the person experiencing it. Because most of the time it's going to pass. You just need a little time.
Yeah.
And rest and get off social. That's probably the best thing about psych wards, is you can't get on the internet. That's it. If you take like 1 week off the internet, if you're like, I got to go to a psych ward, just take 1 week off the internet instead. And that might fix you.
I could see that. Yeah. The internet is the worst. It is. And yet we're using it right now.
Yeah.
But no, it's ugh.
Pros and cons with everything.
Yeah. Now, what are your dreams like while all this is going on? Are they as active and stuff? Are you taking stock in them?
Not really. There's weird things that happen. I remember when I was making my documentary, I had a dream within a dream, but I was also lucid, so I knew I was dreaming. Mm-hmm. And so in this dream within a dream, I was tripping. I was on LSD. And it felt like I was tripping. I knew I was dreaming. And I was like, man, I'm dreaming right now, but I'm dreaming that I'm on LSD and it feels like LSD. That's amazing. How is that happening? I'm even thinking like, how can my brain even produce that feeling just naturally? And then I saw like this sparkle on the edges around things. And I was like, that's a nice little graphic effect. I gotta remember to tell my editor to add something like that, and like find some things for when we do like the LSD scene, or put together the LSD segment in the movie. And then I woke up into another dream, and I was holding this effect in my hand. And I was with my girlfriend at the time and her friend, and they're always talking about dreams. And I was like, girls, I need to remember this effect so that I can put it in the movie. You girls always, I know I'm dreaming right now. You girls always remember your dreams so well. How do you remember your dreams? And her friend was like, oh, well, if you want to remember a dream, just put it in your butt. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, just sit on it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, yeah, you just put the dream in your butt and that's how you remember it. And I was like, and I could tell I was about to wake up, and I'm like, okay. And then I sat on this effect that I wanted to remember. And then I woke up and I remembered every single detail of that dream.
Worked.
More it worked. Clearly. Perfect. Than I ever
have. Yeah. Memorable things. The bus form memories, depending.
Did you tell the woman in your dream that said that, that she yeah. said that? And was she like, yeah, that's exactly what you do?
No, she just laughed a lot. That would have been amazing, though.
Do you ever with dreams?
Someone just said, I never want to remember a dream again in the comments. I don't remember dreams very well at all. Do you?
I go in phases, and I was curious if this happens to you. I go for, you know, usually like weeks at a time where I feel I'll go through periods where my waking hours feel like this is my life. And then there are periods, and then when I go to bed, I'm like, okay, time for rest. And then it flips for long stretches where when I go to bed, it's like, okay, time to go to work. This is where the real action is. Yeah. And I feel like my waking hours are, that's like the rest. I feel like my realities flip-flop a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, not in the way that you were describing where I didn't know the difference.
Right.
But in ways where, like, I'll go through periods where, like, I'm going to bed and I'll be, rather than be like, cool, I can get some rest, I'm like, I'll be like, oh, I'm so fucking tired, and now I'm really, now this is where the action begins.
Like, yeah, yeah.
So it goes back and forth, and in those periods where I will remember a lot of stuff. And but right now I'm probably in a more
I tend to remember more when I nap. And then I have this weird nap thing. I told a couple of people I do this, and people are like, no, I don't do that. I've never heard. But I have this, like, when I'm fading out, there can be like this weird space that's not dreaming, and it's not sleeping, you know, and it's like it's close to it. I think a lot of people experience something like that when you're close to sleeping. But I have after I had started smoking DMT like 7 or 8 years ago, I sometimes have it where if I take a nap and I fade into that spot, but it's way more intense. It's crazier than any dream that I've ever had. It's crazier than any psychedelic that I've ever done. And it's like bungee jumping into this weird abyss of just a completely other dimension. And it scares the shit out of me. It's like every time it's very intense. And then it's like 3 seconds. And then I wake up. I'm like, oh, I am perfectly rested right now. And it's like I just got 4 hours of sleep. And it's like, oh, literally, wow. Like, it's like 5 seconds tops. It's amazing. And it's bizarre.
I think that's like always the moment where I just like jump and like that wakes me up.
Yeah,
but I know what you're talking about. It's almost like you don't even think you're falling asleep. And then like you'll jump and you're like, oh, was I just asleep? Or
yeah. Are you refreshed after it?
No. This is usually what happens to me, like as I'm trying to go to bed for the night.
Yeah, yeah.
I always think of that as like some sort of leftover electrical residue from the day, and I'm just kind of firing off the last few jolts that I have.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I have the visual like I'm stepping off a curb. It's always like when you take that step and you're not.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's what it always feels like to me when that happens, for sure.
Mm. Yeah. I guess you're supposed to journal. I guess if you want to remember them and you want to have lucid dreaming, just start journaling is what they say. And for whatever reason, I don't know why. I'm a writer, you know, it's like I should, but I never have. I used to, if you just set your notepad by your bed and try to do it, that seems to help. Like, cause you know you don't need to write it down because you know you're going to write it. Something about that seems to help me remember them a little bit more, but I don't know. I should practice more. I guess it's kind of interesting, the idea that if you get to lucid dream for whatever that duration is, it's just like you get to live more life in a way.
Yeah, you know? Bonus content.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you mentioned DMT. That's like Would that's like the synthetic equivalent of like toad venom?
Ayahuasca.
Am I getting that wrong? The ayahuasca.
Yeah, there's two kinds of DMT, and they're both very dissimilar. And I believe it's called NN-DMT is like ayahuasca concentrate in a way. It doesn't have all the, but dimethyltryptamine is the main active ingredient in ayahuasca. There's other ones as well, so the experience is slightly different. But it's, so ayahuasca is, you know, about a 4-hour trip of what is usually the most intense experience anyone could have. And DMT is like packing all of that into 5 minutes, basically.
Oh, wow.
And it's exceptionally intense. I don't know that I recommend it. I don't not recommend it. It's not a thing. I've heard people have therapeutic effects from it, but for me, it was just, that was the one that I did for just pure adrenaline rush exploratory. I came up with tons of neuroscience ideas, and a lot of the questions that I ask neuroscientists and stuff on my podcast about memory and or dreams and things like that, it's actually I came up with to explain some of my DMT experiences. So it definitely had value outside of the experience.
Wow.
But it's that 5 to 10 minutes can feel like 1,000 lifetimes. Like I've had a DMT experience where I felt like I lived like over 1,000 lifetimes in that amount of time. And so much so when I came back, I was like, huh, I'm a human in this one. Okay. I forgot. Wow. I completely forgot that I'm a human and I have this life. What do I do again? Like, oh yeah, this reality. I just went and like I lived so many other lifetimes. I completely forgot about this one. And
where are you when you're doing this? Like, what's the setting?
Usually you just want some like, let me see if I can find these handy here, actually. Usually you just want some headphones and a pair of these mindfolds. They have little holes cut out so you can open your eyes inside. But if it's not completely dark, could still have the same kind of visual experience, but everything that's happening in real life will feel like a bit of a like a glare on a screen or something. It just makes it harder to concentrate. And then, I mean, I've had boring DMT trips too, but that's unusual. And then that can be really, I had like 3 times I did it while I was pretty drunk, and that was a mistake every time. But other than that, nothing but good experiences until the last like 3 times, things just started getting too weird and things were getting too real. That's when a lot of my first like time travel connections started happening, because it seemed like I was making predictions about the future. And it was just getting that's
like, what sort of prediction about your own future or the world's future?
Well, it was basically the whole time. So I've had like 100 or so breakthrough experiences on DMT. It's hard to break through. You have to smoke enough of it. There's like a timing issue. And so a lot of times you just miss, you just don't, it's fucking frightening. You like, you'd need to keep on smoking more even when the whole world is collapsing around you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you just end up in this kind of confusing, like it's here but it's just weird. And those experiences, they have shoot, what was the question again? I just lost my train of thought.
Predicting the future.
Oh, yeah,
your own life, or just like you know.
So I kept on, saying like, "What is this?" You know, I'm like pressing these things. This thing would be like, "What are?" I'd be like, "What are you?" I'd be like, "I'm everything." And I'm like, I don't think you are. I think you're my brain. Like, to you, everything that you see seems like everything. This is just classic egocentrism. You're just in my, everything that's in my brain is everything that you have access to, but there are things outside of my brain. That's what you're, and so I'm like having these arguments with these kind of like beings or entities, and I'm like asking them for proof of things, and like weird stuff starts happening. And some of it I'm able to explain scientifically, but then there's some things that just, man, I cannot figure out how that's possible. And is it, you know, a lot of people, I'm in the minority that I think that DMT, I think it's like the brain's like inside out. And I think DMT is like, you know, like if that little girl in the movie Inside Out smoked DMT for her first time and dropped down and saw all those characters and stuff, that's what I think is going on. Most people think you're literally traveling to some other dimension or talking with some like light beings or aliens or whatever. I tend to not think that. But over time, I was like, well, you would need to show me something in the future that I couldn't possibly predict with my own brain. So I was sorting out some system of testing it with these things. And so one time, like the third, on my last three, so my third to last experience, I smoked quite a bit, and there was this weird symbol that it was like, look at this. And it didn't really mean much of anything to me. It just looked like this weird little city out of codes. And compared to everything else going on in the trip, it seemed so insignificant, but it was just, it kept on saying like, remember this thing. And I was like, okay. And then a few months later, I smoked DMT again, and I had the most intense experience that I'd ever had with it. It was the second to last. The last time I did it was on my documentary. But the second to last time I smoked, I had figured out a new system of smoking it, because smoking enough of it is really difficult. And I figured out a new system, and I kind of overshot it. And I had an exceptionally intense experience that it felt like I was like going to have a stroke or a seizure or something like that. And then I opened up my eyes and like took these off, and everything was still disoriented. And I was at a, just in a house, and I like looked up to this corner, and I just saw, it was just the most mundane thing, but it was just this, this like oddly shaped piece of wood trim that had this like strange pattern to it. But everything was like in codes. It's like, I could see you right now, but you'd be covered in like ones and zeros and stuff like that, sort of like, that's a metaphor. Well, this thing had codes all over it. And I was like, oh, that was the symbol that it wanted me to see so badly. And it was the first thing that I saw as soon as I opened my eyes. And it was like, somehow DMT, what it felt like was somehow it knew the first thing that I was going to see after my next DMT experience, months from that time, it was able to show me months previously. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, like on our next episode.
Yeah. It was like, how I didn't know that many months ago that I was going to be in this place and smoking DMT and looking up at this, So that was not that, and I'm not convinced that anything like weird time things or time travel or anything like that or different dimensions is happening. I'm not convinced at all, but it was enough to shake me enough to be like, yeah, I think I don't need DMT anymore. Because it can definitely make reality feel a little slippery. The downside of DMT, and it's pretty much, I had 100 experiences, like 96 of them were absolutely 96 of the best, most fascinating, interesting things. The thing that I've ever experienced in my entire life, hands down. But I've also given DMT to like over 100 people, and wow. Results vary.
And how? So you're there for when they're doing it?
Yeah.
And then when you're 100 times, how over how much time is that? Like, you know,
probably like 6 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I go in streaks of like. Where there'd be a weekend where I'd do like 6 or 7 times or something like that and keep breaking through. It's always harder to do when it's been a while. When you've done it, you're like, oh, that was amazing. Why was I ever scared to do DMT? It was like filled with love and everything's amazing. And it's the most interesting thing I've ever experienced. And I'm laughing and it was great. And I felt like this experience is something that no one else in the world gets to have, and I just feel so privileged that I get to have it. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do that again. But then when it's been even a couple weeks or something, you're like, I don't know if I have it in me to, like, it takes courage to DMT. Mm-hmm. Takes courage / stupidity to like break through. But it is 100 times I broke through. It was probably like another couple hundred times I smoked DMT trying to break through, or microdosing or whatever.
Wow.
And every single time it was a nerve-wracking experience to like get myself to do it, like usually days or weeks of like hyping myself up. But it was just so fascinating, and I don't like when I can't explain something. And it was just the most unexplainable, interesting, weird thing that I'd ever experienced. And so I just kept on going. And that's why I introduced so many other people to it as well, which, by the way, also about the same. So if I say I gave DMT to 100 people, 95 of those people, that was like one of the best things that's ever happened to them.
Wow.
The other 5, they're like, they were like troubled. And because it can feel like, is this real or was that real? Like, that's how real it can feel.
Uh-huh.
And so usually if you have smoked DMT recently, or at least for me, one of the downsides is that I'll be walking down the street, just going about my day, and then I'll need to stop and just be like, is any of this actually real? Like... Is this reality or was that reality? Because I don't understand how they can both be reality. Like, they're just two completely different things. And it's you know, that can make things feel a little slippery for people. But of the people that I know had like the two people that had the worst negative reaction to it, one of them, Mike Kaplan.
I know Mike.
Yeah.
On the show, of course.
They both got really big into ayahuasca afterwards. And that was a way of like processing. Like, they kind of had PTSD from how intense the DMT was.
Oh, wow.
Ayahuasca was a way of like slowing things down and helping them process it. And then they both really thought the ayahuasca was for them life-changing and really interesting and everything. So it's not like I broke them, at least. So that's good.
it all worked out.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into we're pretty much out of time here, but we have to have you back cuz I have so many questions. What about toad venom?
I haven't done it. I was supposed to do it I was waiting to do it on the documentary because I wanted to do like one big one for my first time on the documentary. And then I lost my mind it's so unfortunate because there was a day that we had the cameras, we were good to go, but we had just done a bunch of interviews that day. And I was like, we can just do it in a couple of weeks or whatever. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then in that amount of time, I lost my mind and had to go to a psych ward and took a long break from psychedelics. So that was a
sequel
to try to. Yeah, exactly. There's, I guess the other thing that scares me about that is that, sorry, do we have to go?
No, sorry. I was,
The other thing that scares me about the toad venom is so many, I know so many people that, you know, were atheists or whatever else, and then they smoke the toad venom, and then pretty much everyone reports, they're like, it is a direct connection to God. Like, that's all that it is. Like, no doubt about it. It's just a direct connection to God, to the source. And I kind of am not interested. Like, I don't, like, no, thank you. Someone was like, it's a direct connection to something that seems like God, I'd be like, all right, I want to see a thing that seems like God, but I don't want to believe that I'm connecting.
Does that kind of, does that like appeal to people who are super, super religious? Like the idea that they could access
God? And so, yeah, it's actually a whole problem in the psychedelic community, which is that like there's a dark side to it, is that there's the super spiritual side of it that, under normal conditions can be like, yay, peace, love, believe in yourself, hooray. And then under other conditions, like a global pandemic, turns to paranoia and, okay, you believed everything, you are manifesting your own reality, and now reality is not cooperating. And so you think that it's some plot against you specifically. So I find those ones tend to hop on the conspiracy trains pretty quickly. And I think that shit is pretty dark.
Yeah.
But I mean, but also at the same time, there's things like the Johns Hopkins, like for quitting smoking or using psilocybin for quitting smoking or for depression or whatever else. The number one correlation for the best results is when people report having felt like they had a mystical experience. So that can be incredibly healing for a lot of people. So yeah, it's you know, there again, pros and cons to everything.
Wow. Well, I feel like we could talk, and will you come back?
That's
my question. Will you come back,
Dave? I love you so much. You entertain me on Instagram is every single day, or nearly every day. Every time I check in with you, thanks for all of the fantastic free content. You make me laugh all the time.
Oh, you're too kind. Well, everyone, go watch Psychonautics. What is a comic's journey?
A comics exploration of psychedelics.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a fun film. I was pretty happy.
Highly
with
recommend it.
Actually.
Yeah, it's really. It's real. I highly recommend everyone. Everyone go watch it tonight, and everyone go to shanemoss.com. MAUSS.
Yeah.
To get find his podcasts and all sorts of other good stuff.
Yeah, especially my Mind Under Matter podcast. That's new, and I started with the fantastic artist and comedian Ramin Nazer.
I love his art. It's amazing. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you to those of you who are listening in the futuristic podcast format. Thank you, Boy Criminal Chris Gersbeck.
Thank you.
New Jersey Chicken Rancher Dez.
Yes, sir.
And if you would like to support this program, go to MaximumFun.org/join. Stay hydrated, everybody. Thank you, and good night.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.